Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Nia Kwete, who's an independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and he was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nia Kwete.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
And the elections have been underway in Kenya, at least the counting has, for a couple of days now. But apparently there's a row breaking out over the number of spoiled votes. The electronic counting system crashed, so the votes have to be tallied by hand. And already the party of Uhuru Kenyatta is accusing the United Kingdom of playing a shadowy role in trying to deny him an outright victory from Monday's election. So let's begin with the accusations of the role of Britain.
Certainly. You are right. You know, the best press reports say that thus far about 40% of the votes cast have been counted, and about 6% of that 40%, the votes are spoiled. But the thing is that some, you know, spoiled is a very elastic term in this circumstance, because Kenyans had to put six different colored ballots into six different box, each voter. Because they were voting for president, they were voting for member of parliament, they were voting for senate, they were voting for county governor, they were voting for county assembly, and then the sixth is that they had to vote for just women candidates at the county level. And so some of the spoiled ballots, actually, it looks like people put them in the wrong box. And some whacks are even speculating that the problem might be color blindness. So, but whatever it is, if you include those 6%, then it looks like although Mr. Kenyatta is leading with only 40 counted, if you exclude the spoiled ballots, then he's over 50%. If you include the spoiled ballots, he is below 50%, which means that if that holds, there will have to be a rerun, because under the Constitution, you have to get 50 plus one. If you don't, then there will be a second round. So that is what is causing the anxiety. Now, why are they accusing Britain? Of course, Britain has a very strong influence in Kenya. It was there for, you know, all this time. Probably you could argue that, you know, in East Africa, certainly, that was the prime British colony. So Britain still has a strong interest and influence in Kenya. Here is the other thing. Mr. Kenyatta and his running mate have both been indicted by the ICC as being behind the killing that accompanied the last elections in 2007. And the funny thing was that during those 2000 elections, Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto, who are now running mates, were on opposite sides, and they are accused of killing each other's supporters, and they are due to be tried next month at the ICC. I think that Mr. Kenyatta clearly understands that the international community, especially the West, they don't want him to run. But since he insists on running, they don't want him to win, because if he wins, yeah, he will be a president who's on trial. And a number of international organizations have warned that they will have difficulty dealing with him. So because of that, he is also very suspicious whether they're, I think everybody understands, and I agree that the international community will prefer if Raila Odinga wins, because that will not create complications and problems, because Raila Odinga is not supposed to be tried at the court. So I hope that I haven't confused the issue too much. But this is why there is a dispute about whether to include the spoiled ballots. This is why the Kenyatta running ticket is suspicious of the role of Britain, because they clearly understand that Britain and other international players would rather Mr. Kenyatta did not win because he's been indicted.
So again, I'm speaking with Nia Quetta. He's an independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and was founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. And we're talking about the disputed elections in Kenya, where the counting has been going on since Monday's vote. However, at this point, as Nia pointed out, about 40% of the polling stations have been counted. And Mr. Odinga has 42% of the vote compared to Mr. Kenyatta's 53%. And with 6% of spoiled ballots, that could be an issue. But there are, of course, efforts have been made, surely, to ensure that the candidates must get more than 50% of the total votes cast and at least 25% of votes in half of the 47 counties. This was a requirement introduced in the new constitution to make sure that no president wins solely on the ethnic and tribal support. So how is that going to translate, assuming that that the spoiled ballots don't cut into Kenyatta's lead that much?
Well, if it doesn't, then of course, I mean, the bottom line report, the headlines that we are getting with Mr. Kenyatta getting 53%, the assumption is that he's meeting that 25% in half of the county's threshold. I think it is actually a good thing to put into the Kenyan constitution, because, you know, the elephant in the room is people voting on the basis of ethnicity. I know I consider myself a progressive African, and many of us don't like it when people put too much emphasis saying that all the problems on Africa are because of ethnic hatred, and that we see everything through everything through ethnic eyes. So on the left, we are not comfortable with that, and we tend to deny it. But I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Ethnicity does not drive everything and every issue in Africa, even in a place like Nigeria or Rwanda. On the other hand, it is not true that it plays no role. And the way I look at it is, Ian, it's a question of identity politics. I don't think it's a coincidence that the 43 people of the 43 people who've been president of the United States, 42 have been white men. And so it is all politics, in my view, is identity politics. So in Kenya, yes, people vote according to ethnicity. It's not the only issue, but it's a big issue. So I think the new constitution saying that you have to get 25% in every one or in half of the 47 counties, it's a very good thing to make sure that you have broad support, because I think the reason Kenyatta is leading, there may be other factors, but a big one is he is from the number one in terms of size, the number one ethnic group in Kenya. And his running mate, Mr. Ruto, is from the number three largest group. So you have one and three combined, and Mr. Odinga is from the, in terms of size, from the fourth largest group, the Luo. And his running mate is from the fifth largest. So if you were just going by numbers, and if all the voters identify it on the basis of ethnic community, it seems to me it's a big reason why they are leading. So I think your question is a great question, and I think the elephant in the room is ethnicity, and it was a good idea that the new Kenyan constitution put in place this point that you have to win across the country, so that it's not just one or two ethnic groups banding together to take over the government.
But in terms of the numbers, in terms of the major ethnic groups, the Kikuyu, which is the group to which the candidate Kenyatta, Uhuru Kenyatta, belongs to, that they have about 22% of the population, and Odinga's group, the Luo, are about 11%. And then the other smaller tribes, as you mentioned, make up the rest, and that they've managed, both candidates have managed to split the tickets with minority tribal representation. But I think the point that you made earlier, surely, Niyekwete, is the key point, isn't it? That you have a political ruling class here in Kenya. It doesn't matter who's up and who's down. They seem to trade off. The fact that Uhuru Kenyatta is running, his running mate is the guy that he ran against last time. I mean, it sounds like to me that that's what the issue is here. You have a kind of revolving door political ruling class, and then you've got this vast amount of voters out there in these shanty towns and slums, etc., who at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter too much to their lives, does it? Who gets elected?
I think you have a point there, but I think an additional point is the ICC, the International Criminal Court, which has indicted both of those two on Mr. Kenyatta and his running mate. I think there is a big factor. This is my reading of it. I think that's why they banded together. You are right, of course, that in Kenya and other African countries, even the so-called, the ones that seem to be doing very well, like Botswana and Ghana and other places, yes, you've got the class divide. You've got the elites who want to trade power. They want to keep power. If they can't keep it, they want to trade it among themselves. But I think the Kenyans have actually made a strong effort to break with that. So I think my reading is that this alliance between Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto, I think it came from fear of them being hauled to the ICC. And so they decided, because they've been enemies, you know, I mean, it is, you know, the other, the counterpoint to the elites trading power is that frequently the elites also, individual members of the elite, will have bitter rivalries, even hatred among themselves. And yet Mr. Ruto and Mr. Kenyatta came together. And my reading is their number one galvanizing point is, if we don't hang together, we'll hang separately. So they form this alliance. If they win, it complicates the effort of the ICC to try elected African leader and his vice president. I think that's why they came together. There are other factors, but in my opinion, this was a big driving issue.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Niyekwete. Very, very comprehensive analysis, and I thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Niyekwete, who's the independent policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Quiet voice, singing something to me, an angel song.